Brekesh, just two quick things before we start. Obviously, schools do well when they have good leadership. So if you talk to people in YU, many people attribute the success of Sy Sims to Dean Wasserman. And on a personal level, I want to say, some of you may know that I once wrote something critical about Sy Sims. And since then, Dean Wasserman has been totally friendly to me. So it really shows outstanding character, which I think many people will testify to as well. So we are quite pleased that he's come to speak for us today.
Thank you, Rabbi Blau. Thank you guys for coming. I appreciate the attendance. Very much a team game, though, in terms of attributing the success. It's very much the klal that has been able to put together all the momentum that has been built over the last few years. In terms of when Rabbini was asking me to come and speak to you, he wanted me to talk a little bit about, essentially, Torah u business. Being a Torah-grounded professional excelling in the workplace and in the community. Within the Shovavim Parshas, struck me that there is a common theme that comes through within those Parshas. Wanted to pick a little bit of your brains in terms of what that theme is. How important is preparation in Yiddishkeit? And can you prove it from the Shovavim Parshas? Or more generally, from elsewhere in Yiddishkeit? How important is preparation? Wait, go ahead. Okay, prepping for Shabbos. Okay, so where do we see that that's the importance of that?
Dressing up nicely, like big day Shabbos, or like having anything that you specially do for like Shabbos.
Okay, and some of that. When are you Shomer Shabbos?
Omer Shabbos, including in being Shomer Shabbos.
Okay, but when are you being Shomer Shabbos? When do we typically think about it as that? On Shabbos, you are being Shomer Shabbos. Well, in that case, we're going to go back a little bit further than Shovavim Parshas about that. In that case, if we're seeing Shomer Shabbos as being applicable to that, we have a phrase back when we had Yosef and his dreams. We had Yosef dreams about something that's going to happen off in the future. And then it says, in terms of Yaakov Avinu, V'aviv shamar et hadavar. What would shamar mean there? Guarded? How would you guard that davar? What would that mean in terms of aviv shamar et hadavar? Okay, a little puzzling in the context of Shomer Shabbos. Well, the after Rav, this is actually Rav Soloveitchik builds on what the after Rav says about it, and thank you for raising the Shabbos stuff for us. The after Rav says that actually, what does Shomer mean there? It means anticipating some future event. Yosef had a dream about something that's going to happen, and his father was anticipating it happening, looking forward to it, building towards something in the future. So actually from that context, when are we really Shomer Shabbos? Is it on Shabbos itself? No, it's actually when we're anticipating Shabbos is coming and we're going to work towards it. What are some examples of how we work towards it? So you're talking about putting on big day Shabbos. That's presumably before Shabbos, being able to prepare. What are some other examples?
In a Yom Kippur scenario, did you satisfy animals you would kill?
Okay, so being able to prepare the animals before you get to Shabbos. Do you have any examples from the Gemara of people who did that? Okay, so we did have, so you might be thinking about Shammai, talks about Beitza Tes Zion, about Shammai, whenever he would run into during the week, something that he might want to be able to use on Shabbos, put it aside, get that animal ready for being able to have the shechting towards there. And so the building towards it along the way. Another example?
I don't know the actual rabbi's names, but in confusion, talks about how like they would sear the fish head or like do specific things in preparation for Shabbos that they had a part in preparing.
So exactly. So Erev Shabbos, the Gedolim would be contributing in some way to the family, to the household, taking out the garbage, preparing the food, being able to help with all of that. What are some of the ways that we can see about preparation throughout the week on the way to it? Do we have any reminders that Chazal have built in to how we're preparing during the week to keep Shabbos forefront for us? Go ahead. Go ahead. Okay, what do we see in Shir Shal Yom?
Like, we keep on talking from Shabbos, so we're like one day from Shabbos, 2 days from Shabbos. So it seems like we're constantly on the same.
So, Hayom Yom today, Rishon B'Shabbos. Yeah. We are continually having it be very grounded in what's going to be coming up. We're being Shomer Shabbos when we're saying Shir Shal Yom of Yom Rishon. Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach actually, right before he would say Shir Shel Yom, he would say Zachor Ad Yom HaShavah LeKodesh. He would have an explicit pasuk reminding him about that. What's also the most unusual thing that we do at the end of one of the Shir Shel Yoms throughout the week? What is something that would be in this same vein that we do around that? Go ahead. Great. So outside of the perek of what we're saying on Wednesday for Yom Ravi, what is it that we add? Lechuna Rananalash. When is that? Is that supposed to be on Wednesday? No, that's going to be on Shabbos. That's going to be our bringing Shabbos in. On Wednesday, it's reminding us, start skating where the puck is going to be. Start getting yourself into that mode on the way to being able to say that the Kabbalah Shabbos is coming. And the Gemara tells us that overall, when we take a look, this is in Psachim on Daf Kuf Vav, tells us that essentially the week is what you can see as 3 + 1 + 3. 3 days of the preparation. As you're saying, Yom Revi'i, we start seeing Kabbalah Shabbos coming. Then the 1 day of Shabbos, the plus one. And then the aftermath of the 3 days after. Until when can we say Abdullah? Tuesday. That's the plus three. You have until that point, and then it starts kicking in on Wednesday. Then you're going to be able to start heading towards Lechuna Ranana. So, terrific example in terms of Shabbos being able to prep. We see how all of that coalesces, of being able to come together, of our seeing this future eventuality of Friday night of this week. Every day that you're saying Shir Shel Yom, be thinking about what is coming. Wednesday, double down on it. Be able to make sure that you're going to be getting to the Shabbos mode of being able to have that preparation happen on the way to there. Okay, so great first example. Thank you for kicking that off. What are other examples that we might be able to see from the Parshas?
Israel coming 40 days before
Sinai. Okay, so preparing on the way to Matan Torah and being able to do that. So let's take some examples within that. Okay, so if you looked at, I don't know if there's a Baal Kore here or anything like that. I don't know who does it for the yeshiva. But anyone ever notice how many psukim there are in the Aseret HaDibros? Okay, there are 13 psukim. In the Aseret HaDibros. You're talking about when Bnei Israel got to being into the mode, we got to Har Sinai and they're preparing. That's the parak before it. How many psukim in that parak? There are 26 psukim of the preparation for Matan Torah, twice as many as what you actually have in the Aseret HaDibros. What else is 26? What does 26 represent? Hashem's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei. Hashem is putting his name on preparation. His name on the way in which the foundation building goes on before we even head into the actual act that we are going and doing. And so the same kind of way, we have in some ways a 6-to-1 ratio of the weekdays preparing us up to Shabbos. We have a 2-to-1 ratio of being able to build a foundation on the way to Matan Torah. Any other ones that come to mind? Any other examples? Go ahead. Okay, great. So how many days do they have to prepare ahead of time for that? Okay, so you're actually skating to, we could see this as positioning within Parsha Shmini. Parsha Shmini is when they were inaugurating the Mishkan. Okay, was it really the eighth day, Yom HaShmini, that they were inaugurating the Mishkan? It's actually the first day of the Mishkan. But what was necessary to be able to prepare for that? In addition to all of the building and things like that, there were the 7 days of preparing for being able to inaugurate the Mishkan. It should have been called that Parsha, Vayiba Yom HaRishon, but Yom HaRishon would not have happened without the prior 7 days. And that's why that Parsha is called Vayiba Yom HaShmini, to remind us about the preparation on the way to being able to have that Kedusha. Okay, any other examples that come to mind? Go ahead.
I have a point against. I think it's a midrash with the matzah, right, that they didn't have enough time to actually like bake the bread, so it's almost like they didn't have time to prepare.
Okay, it's interesting. Do you think that it would have been better for them to have prepared a little bit better rather than having to rush out to the chippazon?
Maybe it would be less distinct of a holiday.
Hey, you might have some better stuff you could eat on Pesach if they had prepared a little bit better than that. So, but it could work in either direction in terms of that. There's the b'dieved of they had to run. Would they have preferred to have a lechatchila?
Yeah.
That would have been a little bit better around that. You can even look at also the Korban Pesach. Did they suddenly take it, shecht it, and now they're running out of Mitzrayim? No. Prepare it, tie it up, have the lead up to it, and things like that. So Pesach can also fit into that. Okay, go ahead.
I think that's a very strong support from the fact that we specifically mentioned that we weren't able to prepare as we wanted to.
Okay, yeah, so it works in that direction for that. Go ahead. Okay, so what was the preparation for that? Okay, and so being able to have the ways in which there's going to be the signals to everyone inside the house that we're going to be protected by Hashem, and then the external signals that are going to be coming from that. And any Jew who didn't go and prepare for Makos Bechoros, what would have happened to that family? They would have been part of Makos Bechoros, and so the essential way in which he was protecting it. Okay, interesting. How long was he preparing for? Okay, so this might be this might break the ratio that we might have in terms of what we've been looking at here. You can see in some ways we had just in the fifth aliyah of yesterday's parsha, we had talking about each of the yuntivs and things like that, 49-1 ratio for Shavuos. Of being able to prepare for a Shavuos, count up to it, and things like that. But maybe you've come up with one that's beyond that. Go ahead.
I have two examples of one, Aseres and Shuva.
Okay, great.
And
Elul, we could add before that, all the way up to there. Sephardim do it better than Ashkenazim, of being able to prepare throughout Elul and being able to do it right.
And second, we learned that Ten Makos took like a year. And then Moshe asked, I just want 3 days. We're just going to go out to the tribe, we'll come back. And like the whole idea is that if they would have left in like 3 days, they wouldn't have like, they need to prepare themselves to move the status of that we're slaves. So,
yeah. Okay, great. So the mindset shift that they had to go through on the way to that. We can also see another example of that mindset shift. First Pasuk of B'Shalach that we were just laning recently. A little bit of a puzzle in that first Pasuk. First half of that first Pasuk. When Paro was sending us out, what would be the right amount, the right derech for Hashem to take us? We're trying to run from slavery. We've got the marauding Egyptians on our heels. Would it be the right thing to take us the long path or the short path? The short path. What does that pasuk though tell us? Hashem distinctly did not take us derech Eretz Plishtim. Ki karov hu. Tells us explicitly there, it was because it was the short path that he didn't take us. Why won't he take us the short path? What had to happen for Bnei Yisrael coming from the Shibud mindset? Would they have been able to rush right in to Eretz Yisrael, conquer the land, build a nation, with still the Shibud mindset? Would that have worked? How well would that have gone for us? That would have been the ultimate in asking for it in terms of being able to shift gears immediately. And so as you're saying, being able to shift that mindset from it, we needed that time under Moshe's tutelage in the Midbar to be able to shed that mindset. It's not anything that you can click your finger, that you can just snap your fingers and be able to say, I'm going from one right into the next. Hashem, in some ways, put his imprint on the need to shift gears in your preparation, to build your foundation, to be able to put all of these things in place for the next stage of life. For Bnei Yisrael, it was going to be coming into Eretz Yisrael and being able to have that preparation on the way to it as being the foundation that they were building. Couple of other ones that come to mind. So you've hit on a bunch of the ones that when I was brainstorming about this. Tu B'Av. What is so important about Tu B'Av? Where does it rank in the Jewish calendar in importance? Is it important? What does the Gemara tell us about? Okay, like Yom Kippur in what way?
They dance and they've never seen like such simcha being from
the most simcha dick 2 days of the year. Tu B'Av. Why? We're in two different places. Grapples with why was Tu B'Av so important. Talks about it both, the end of Tanis and also in Bava Basra and Kuf Chaf Aleph. Give a bunch of explanations, handful of explanations on the way to it. Those weren't good enough for Rabbah and Rav Yosef. Rabbah and Rav Yosef say, you know why it was such a Simcha Dik day? That's when they finished chopping the wood. What's so big a deal about chopping wood? Would we think that that was going to be so important? They have a variety of other explanations that weren't good enough for Rabbi and Rav Yosef. They had to come up with this one. Why would chopping the wood be so important? The karbonos that are the centerpiece, could those have happened without the Atzeira Ma'aracha? No, the preparation for karbonos is what we celebrate. Then there's a variety of things, the same karbonos every day, and the Shema Parim Satenu, things like that. But the actual preparing of the wood for the karbanos is the thing that makes for one of the two happiest days of the year. Last one that comes to mind, just from like a YU perspective, Rav Herschel Schechter, Gadol Hador, Rosh Yeshiva in YU, they were asking, why was he able to come up with such amazing Piskei Halacha with Corona? He had a series on Piskei Corona that he came up with. What was the answer? He's been preparing for 80 years for being able to be ready for this moment. This is where you're building your foundation. This is where you're having everything come together of being able to be ready for everything that comes in the next stage on the way to it. So let me just give you a couple of examples with me, because Rabini had asked me to relate it to my experiences. When I was in your shoes, or just backing up a year for a bunch of you, when I was in 12th grade, I grew up in L.A. I went to EULA for high school. And back then, this was ancient history, this was back in the mid-80s, wasn't as common that we would have going to the yeshiva or anything like that. And so I actually had decided for the last 2 years of EULA, I was actually in the base medrash rather than being the high school part. So I figured, I'm Yosei, having done my extra learning. And so I was going to go right to college. I also, for some reason, had this bug in my ear that had whispered to me that finish college in 3 years. I was going to be graduating high school at 16, finish college by 19. This is all grand. You're going to have the game plan for life. April of my senior year, I got called into the Rosh Yeshiva's office. Rav Shalom Tendler. He looks at me right across the desk, and he says to me, Noam, you're going to yeshiva. How would you have reacted to that? What would you have said? No, Rebbe, I have my game plan. I'm executing on it. I'm going to get this done by 19. This would throw me off from my game plan. Thought for a second and said, okay, Rebbe, where am I going? The three-year plan, I ended up coming to Israel, then went to college. In college, I actually got a chance to be able to act on something that was an insight that I got during my year in yeshiva. The insight that I got was, it is better to do things right than to do them fast. I had been in a rush. I was doing the fast. Being able to step back and be able to get a little bit of context is when I realized the importance of preparation, the importance of foundation building, the importance of taking the time, especially during this critical stage of life. You're building your foundation for the next decades. Being able to slow down and do it right was a critical thing that I hadn't been doing until that point, and realized at that point, yes, let me be able to see what are the things I should be putting in place. Invest a little more time in myself. Be able to find things that are other pieces that I might have neglected. And so I was coming into college actually as an engineer. But along the way there, I decided, are there other things I might want to be able to build in as my foundation? And so I experimented, I explored, I tried out the engineering plus psychology combination. What now you might be able to call the ChatGPT major. Bring computer engineering together with psychology, artificial intelligence. I also decided to put toes into the waters of the business plus engineering and loved that combination, found it very powerful. To do that, I needed to spend 5 years in college. The old me would have said, no way. I wouldn't have even thought about it. I wouldn't have explored. I wouldn't have seen this as an option even. Decided to invest, did that extra time. And the three-year plan that I had come into right before the meeting with Rav Shalom became 6 years between the end of high school and the end of college. And so that was where I saw a lot of the power. Today, I would not be where I am today. I can trace back to you, for you a whole bunch of things throughout life that I would not have been able to do if not for that foundation building that I did back in college. And so shifting gears into the business realm, being able to bring together the two of them in a very powerful combination, got a bunch of entrepreneurial experience, another one that we can point to in some ways of being able to take that lesson. And it set the table for all the things that I have done since then. And so key insight that I got, Rav Shalom into yeshiva, into realizing, build that foundation, do the preparation, take the thing that Hashem puts his signature on as a critical foundation building on the way to it. Also, when I was coming out of undergrad, how long do you think people typically stay in the workforce before they go back for their MBA? How long do you think that is? It's about 2 years, 3 years that they'll get. They'll check that box if I got some work experience, then they'll go back and do it. This is on the personal side, but also on the foundation building side. Because my wife was going to be, she was in residency, she's a doctor. And so I had a little bit of handcuffs on me, but also I welcomed the opportunity to spend what turned out to be 5 years working. I ended up working those 5 years and doing for 3 years of it entrepreneurial stuff that has set the table for a lot of the things that I've done since then. A Gamzula Tova that I was investing in that because I probably would not have been able to get into the MBA program that I did if not for my investing in that extra foundation. And then what has been building on since then, all of the other things that came together were because of the foundation building. And so all of these examples that we have here in terms of some of the things that we are making sure during this next very formative set of 4 or 5 years, however it's going to be, in yeshiva and then coming to college, about being able to do the best job that you can. In terms of how to being able to do that, a lot of times people focus on the knowledge that you gain, the tochen, say in college, what you are learning, what you're majoring in, and things like that. One of the things that's underappreciated, though, is the intangibles that you are building. Not just the knowledge, but also the muscles you are building that are going to set you up for the workplace after you are leaving from there. So to set a little bit of the context for this, there's a machlokas in the Medrash. What is the most important pasuk in the Torah? First thought, what would you nominate in terms of the most important pasuk in the Torah?
Shema Yisrael.
Shema Yisrael, that's the first one that comes there. What? Haftal Erecha Kamocha. So Shema Yisrael, a little bit, the Ben Adam LeAtzmo, and then Haftal Erecha Kamocha, Ben Adam LeChavero, and things like that. Okay, so someone's seen the Medrash in terms of that. These are all the ones we would think of initially as being the right ones, but what is the one that you were just suggesting? Okay, the Korban Tan. Why would we even think that that would be in the top 100 of psukim within the Torah? This is what Shimon ben Pazi proposes as the most important within the Torah. Why would that be so important? Okay, so the being able to have the daily that you are building into your routine, this is one of the most important things that hopefully over the next few years you will build as a muscle that you'll be able to take into the workplace. Koveya itim. That is one of the things that if you have not built strong koveya itim muscles, when you get into the workplace with the pressures of work, family, and all the other things that go into it, what do you think is going to be the first thing that's going to get cut? Your koveya itim is going to be the first thing you're going to sacrifice. What you have to build over the next few years are your strong koveya itim muscles. By the way, that medrash, what do you think they say is how we paskin, quote unquote, in terms of what is the most important pasuk in the Torah? Happens to be this one. The kviyas of itim is critical for being able to have a Torah-grounded life. And especially when you're living a Torah-grounded life as a professional in the workplace, this is where you have to build it over the next few years. Being able to have the ways in which college is going to be having you be able to build those and have it be sustained. Another key thing, though, is being able to build robust koveya itim muscles. Now, that's going to be very fragile. You hit your first deadline at work and suddenly it's gone. Being able to do that. But also, one of the key things is building ways in which you're going to go mechayel el chayel. Not just that you finish yeshiva and then you're on autopilot. Not just that you finish college and you're going to continue at that level. You have to go mechayel el chayel in your learning. This is something that was driven home to me at, it was about now 3 times ago, in the Siyum HaShas. Rabbi Frand was talking, and this is when I had just finished my first round of doing Shas. He was talking essentially directly to me when he was saying this. He said, if this time around, you just took the daf and you read through it, now you have to start doing a shir. If you did a shir this time, then you have to be able to start doing chazara in addition to the shir. If you have been doing chazara, etc., you have to go mechayel achayel each round. It is not that each time, each cycle of 7 years, you were doing the same thing as what you did before. And so after that, for my next cycle, what I decided to do was, each day, I'm going to do 3 passes through the daf. Each day, I'm going to do the night before, I'm going to go through it on my own. The next morning, I'm going to listen to the shir by Rav Aryeh Leibowitz. People familiar with Rav Leibowitz? So he was my Rebbe Muvhak on the daf.
He came earlier in the year.
Okay, great. So he was my Rebbe Muvhak for the entire last daf cycle. Actually, one of the biggest schuyas that I had was they asked me to do my Siyuma Shastra, the last round, at the 2019 Hanukkah concert. And as I was about to do it, just before Benny Friedman and Mordechai Shapiro took the stage, Rav Leibowitz walked in and took a seat right there, and I could publicly thank him for having been my Rebbe throughout the entire cycle. Okay, but that was last time around. I would do night before Rav Leibowitz's shiur, and then a Chazara pass, do whatever I needed after the shiur. So what am I going to do this time around? What is this cycle going to be? Do a little bit of brainstorming and talking with some people and things like that. What I decided to try to take on was what we call double daf. Can you do two dafim a day? One of the key things, though, that people tend to neglect is the second of the key goals of daf yomi. So the first goal is what everyone focuses on, the tochen. What are you learning? What is the second key goal of daf yomi? It's the achdus. Everyone literally being on the same page. I can walk into a shul in Rechavia and know what the shiur is going to be on. I can be sitting down across the table from someone I've never met for lunch in New York City. They see that I'm doing daf. Turns out they are. The next 45 minutes is a chat about what's going on in the daf that day. This is the achdus that comes from daf yomi. What happens if I am doing on the first day of double daf, brachos beis and gimel, and then the next day I am brachos dalet and hey? Where's the achdus the entire rest of the cycle? I'm completely off from everyone else on that. And so it was actually a suggestion of someone who I was chatting with. He was a Magid Shir in Baltimore. He said, why don't you do, when you are doing in this day, brachos beis, do the equivalent daf from the second half of Shas. So for instance, right now, what is daf doing? Anyone know? Okay, Nazir. What is this? Chulin. Why would I be doing Chulin also? Chulin is half of Shas off. Chulin is where I am on the other side of it. I'm also walking around each day with my Nazir. But by being able to do the two of them together, I can be the Achdus with everyone else and be able to also be accomplishing going Mechayel Achayel, as Rabbi Frand had been talking about. The other fuel on that was poured on the fire, by the way, was when we went to the Siyuma Shas back in MetLife Stadium last time around. My younger son was there, and he was looking through the booklet that they give out at the Siyuma Shas. And he knows that, given my entrepreneurial things that I've been studying for the last 25 years, when I see the word founding, I'm there. He knows it'll get my attention. He said, Abba, there's a story here on this founding of Shas, the founding of Daf Yomi. You want to take a look at it? Grabbed it. Took a look through. When do you think that the Daf was founded? It was founded Rosh Hashanah 1923. What does that mean for the 100th anniversary of the founding of this worldwide changing movement? Rosh Hashanah 2023. This Rosh Hashanah. If you are doing double daf this cycle, when do you think you finish Shas? That month. Yirtzeh Hashem, if anyone's going to hear, be at YU. I am making, this is going to be the ultimate chayav, if you will, of my having to finish it. I'm inviting you the last Thursday night before Rosh Hashanah to come to my Siyuma Shas in the Gluck Beis Medrash. And this is where we'll be able to see the culmination of Rabbi Frand, just with a little bit of what he was talking about a couple of cycles ago, that has culminated in a very different going Mechayel Echayel for me than I might have expected. But this is part of the Kvius and the Etim. A lot of people, when they talk about Daf Yomi, they lose the focus and they focus on the Daf part. The Yomi is the critical thing. Plug in whatever you have, blank yomi. Figure out how to be able to build the kvius in it, be able to have the kovea itim, about every day doing something. Doesn't have to be the daf, be something smaller, something radically different. But have something that fits you so that you can go mechayel echayel in your learning and in all the other ways that you're going to be able to build that. So those are some of the intangibles in terms of that. One of the other key things, I got an interesting insight now a little bit more than a year ago into the intangibles and whether they last in terms of the YU students. So our career center convenes each month. I just missed this month's one on Erev Shabbos because I am here instead, and so I wasn't able to tune in. Shabbos just started when it did. But they convene a bunch of employers each month to give us insights into the job market and the things that are going on there. A little more than a year ago, they convened an interesting bunch of people. Non-Jewish employers who employ YU students. They asked them the simple question, why do you do that? Why do you come and hire the YU students? First couple of answers were what I expected. Build the strong skills, all the things you're doing academically, all those types of things. The third answer was the most intriguing for me, and it's shy to the things that we're talking about here. The third answer, they said, is that when we hire people, students who are graduating from other colleges, by 2 in the afternoon, their tongues are dragging on the floor, they're craving a siesta, they can't get through the workday. They've gotten used to a nice and easy college life. Said, why you students at 2 in the afternoon? They tell us that's when they were just starting class. They were having cheer from 9 until 2, and now they're heading into the classrooms. They learned how to manage their time. They learned durability and persistence. They learned all of the habits that are needed to excel in the workplace. Just a fascinating thing in terms of the intangibles that you build and all of the muscles that you're able to bring together when you have that foundation building and the preparation for what is going to be that key transition on the way to the workplace. All of the things that are have to come together for you to succeed as a Torah-grounded Jew, being able to excel in the workplace. So one of the other key things in terms of that, let's see in terms of where you guys think we're coming into the preparation for the workplace. So our mission at SciSims is exactly what Rav Binney asked me to talk about. Preparing Torah-grounded professionals going to excel in the workplace and the community. How many people will be able to say right now that you could achieve that mission? Torah-grounded, excelling in the workplace and in the community. Anyone? What we want to have is at graduation, when we ask you that same question, we have a sea of hands. We have every single person saying, I've been able to accomplish every piece of that. How to be Torah-grounded, how to excel in both the workplace and the community. So let me give you one example of some of the things that was a difficult transition that you would be facing on the way to that. How many of you plan to interview for a job sometime in the future? Anyone here? Okay, so we got just about everyone here. Okay, so let me ask you one question about that process. You've got an interview for a job that you really want to have. I'm going to give you three options. I could give you a fourth. I don't think I want to do that. I'm going to give you three options for the question that I'm going to ask you about what you're going to do in that. The question is, when are you going to tell them about Shabbos? When are you going to tell them that I'm not available to you for 25 hours a week? So think about when you're going to do that. Option number one, are you going to tell them at your first interview for this job that you really want? Second, are you going to tell them when you get the offer? Third, are you going to tell them the first day of work? Or fourth, the one I don't want any of you to vote for, going to tell them on the first early Friday in the winter as you walk out the door? Okay, so let's see, just show of hands where you come out. Done this with a couple of you already. Okay, so first, you're in this interview that you want for this job. Who's going to tell them at the first interview? Okay, so we got probably about a dozen, not dozen, that we have there. How many people are going to tell them when you get the offer? Okay, so about 15 or so that we have across that. How many are going to tell the first day of work? Okay, interesting. So we have a consensus about not that. Do we have a consensus? Well, I could take the vote for the last one, but I assume I shouldn't. Do we have a consensus around the first two options? Do we know what to do? In the workplace, we were completely split. 12 to 15 or so around wherever that is. Do we know with these workplace issues what we should be doing? Do we know halakhically what we should be doing? What would Chazal say to us hashkafically? What do role models who have gone ahead of us grappled with this? What have they found as their solution to it? This is day one of our Jewish values curriculum and the practical workplace halakha course. You will see the makoros. You will see the role models. You'll be able to learn and be prepared for this. If you get hit by these kinds of issues in the workplace, what's going to happen to you? Mind racing, scrambling in real time. Is that a recipe for making the right decision? That is going to be very ill-fated. And by the way, how important is it that you be consistent in the signals that you're sending your employer about your Torah importance, about where the red lines are? If you're random, is that going to be a good thing? That's going to be the least helpful thing for you and for everyone else who comes after you and every other Jew is in the same workplace at the time. You have to have consistency. You have to be prepared. You have to have thought about this. You have to have even done a role play with your employer about Shabbos to be able to have you be able to do that conversation well. So these are the kinds of things that you need to be prepared for that college students aren't. But by taking that course, being able to do the Jewish values curriculum, that's where you'll be prepared for it. Just to give you a taste of day two of that course. So now it is day one of work. You just met your colleagues. You're walking up the street with them. And you see they make a right-hand turn into a treif restaurant. What are you going to do? Deer in the headlights, real-time decision-making, bad. This is where you need preparation. This is where you need the foundation building. That's just 2 days within one of the courses within the Jewish values curriculum. And so this is where your foundation building is critical for you being able to succeed as a Torah-grounded Jew in the workplace, being able to excel and bring everything that you can in terms of being able to succeed and be able to have all the ways that you're going to be able to prepare on the way to it. Some of the other things to be able to prepare, to be able to be very much sought after within the workplace, is that you've built your foundation also on the academic side. Being able to have the excellence that you're going to be able to build in to be able to do that. A key thing is that a lot of our uniqueness comes from the ooh, if you will. Torah ooh business. This is not two separate things. This is not in Shir we learn the Torah, and in the secular side we learn the business. Your uniqueness in the workplace will come from the ooh that brings them together. In Shir last year, YU was learning Bava Basra. Contracts, incentives, organizations are a bunch of the things that will come up within there. Who do you think was being able to see a lot of the nuances of that Gemara? Which of the students? A lot of them were the ones who had learned contracts, organizations, and incentives in the workplace, in the business world, in economics, in all of this. That's where you're going to see unique things in Shir because of the things that you've learned. And vice versa. There's all sorts of ways that you will be different in the workplace because of your Torah knowledge. How to be able to map the insights that you've gotten from understanding the Shakla Vitaria, understanding the lens that Chazal brought to human psychology, understanding all the things that you get in Shir that give you a unique way in which in the workplace you're going to be even better. In a lot of ways, the echoes of that call that we had a little bit more than a year ago with those employers around the uniqueness of the YU students also highlighted that. So for instance, in my own domain, founding, Azir Kenegdo and the insights that we get from the Machlokes between Rashi and the Netziv over what it means has fundamental implications for how founding teams are able to work together. Founders, has anyone heard that there's a high rate of failure in startups? Okay, yeah, most people have heard about that part. What is the lingo in Silicon Valley? Make friends with failure. Is that easy to do? Does that feel good when you fail? Is that the kind of thing that you say, hey, let me do that again so I can fail even more? The critical thing is being able to learn how do you reprogram that natural inclination to recoil from failure and instead be able to get stronger from it. Who can we learn that from? Well, let me give you a little bit of insights into the era that we are in right now. March 3rd, 2020. Does anyone know where they were? Almost exactly 3 years ago. Where were you on March 3rd, 2020?
Probably in school.
Okay, possibly for that. I was in D.C. Why would I have been in D.C.? APAC. I was there with 75 of our students who were going to APAC. I was sitting in the big room with them in the YU section. There was an empty seat right next to me. Dr. Chaim Nissel, our dean of students, sat down next to me at about 9:30 in the morning. And he said the one line that has changed our lives over the last 3 years. That one line was, did you hear about what happened at SAR? What had happened at SAR?
We shut down.
That was the day that COVID hit the Frum community. That was the day SAR shut down. The next day, we had a call after early minion, 7:15 in the morning, among the deans and the provost. We shut down YU, first university in the country, east of Washington State, to shut down. What was the daf that day? Does anyone know what the daf that was on March 3rd, 2020? It was about 2 months into Shas, because we had the Siyum HaShas back on January 4th of 2020. That daf that day was Brachos Daf Samach. How does Brachos Daf Samach end? Rabbi Akiva trying to get to a town. Dangerous times. Romans after every Jew. All sorts of other things that were going on then. They don't have room for him. How does that feel if you're Rabbi Akiva? Feel good? No. Major devastation. But how had Rabbi Akiva been reprogrammed? Does anyone know who Rabbi Akiva's Rebbeim were? Who were his Rebbeim? Okay, hopefully your memories for your Rebbeim will be even better. But Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer were his Rebbeim. That's what people commonly cite. But what was the Rebbe that he spent the most time under? The Gemara tells us that he spent 22 years under Nachum Ish Gamzu. What had Nachum Ish Gamzu done during that time? Going back to your point about the mindset shift and things like that. He had developed in his Talmidim, reprogrammed that natural recoil, and instead, when you hit a setback, make it into a Gamzu Latova. Partner with Hashem, become a shutup with Hashem, to be able to get stronger from it. What was Hashem doing on the day that COVID hit? Through the daf, he was sending us a signal of, yes, you're going to have the devastation on the health side, but find ways to get stronger from it. Find ways to make it a Gamzu Latova, and that was the signal that he was sending us from that. This is a unique lens that I was able to bring in now to teaching founders how to deal with failure. Take from Rabbi Akiva the mindset, be able to see that this is an opportunity to get stronger, throw yourself into becoming a partner with Hashem to do it, and that is the key way that we can have entrepreneurs and founders get even stronger for the things that they're doing. That gives you just examples of unique business u Torah, Torah u business, of how we can bring those all together. And by doing this over the next few years, practicing this, being able to see this lens, that's where you're going to be even stronger coming into the workplace. And so it's a variety of these things about being able to have the ways in which you're going to be able to build your foundation, take the time, be able to put your thought into it, do things right rather than fast, be able to have the ways in which you're preparing yourself for this mission, about being able to be a Torah-grounded professional excelling in the workplace and in the community, be able to have the U become your uniqueness, the key to being able to excel, both in the base medrash and also in the workplace, and making it a more impactful and richer life for you on your way to being able to have this foundation building. So it's Lacha Rabba with the rest of your year. Thank you guys for your participation and your ideas. Yeshe Koach.
Do you want to take two questions?
We take a couple questions then. I actually have to run to the airport, so if we could do mincha.
Okay.
And nine people game from doing mincha?
Okay, so we use the mincha at 12:50, but maybe to
make
your trip to the airport eat more easily, we'll start right now.
12:50, 12:50?
Yeah.
So let's take a couple questions until 12:50.
Okay?
We'll do it.
Yeah. So I just want to thank Dean Wasserman for an excellent presentation. We'll take two questions then. Anybody with a question?
Unless you guys want to run to lunch. But any questions? Any things we should tackle? Go ahead, please.
When should you tell your...
we will get you an application to cross-register into the Practical Workplace Halakha course. Yeah, please, go ahead. The Al-Reg Halakhas of that is not even close to what you can cover. Okay, go ahead.
How would you respond to a radical Zionist that suggests that making life... these sorts of questions are all sorts of questions that you have in America... you may not have those questions in Jewish society in Israel.
So, Jewish society in Israel, if you are going to work, even, let's make it a more extreme question, for a frum company, will you have any issues about yichud in the workplace? That's another day of the course. That's just one example of where, even in frum companies, even in Ir HaKodesh, you have to be prepared for being able to grapple with these types of things. Make sense? Okay, any others that we should tee up, or... okay, thank you all again. Hatzlacha Rabba with the rest of your year.
Thank you very much. It's excellent. Do you want someone to pack you lunch for you?